Chapter 9. During the previous term, he had reached an unusual level mentally, but the VAC pulled him back towards public schoolishness. He was less alert. He again behaved as he supposed he was supposed to behave, a perilous feat for one who is not dowered with imagination. His mind, not obscured totally, was often crossed by clouds, and though Miss Alcott had passed, the insincerity that led him to her remained. His family were the main cause of this. He had yet to realize that they were stronger than he and influenced him incalculably. 3 weeks in their company left him untidy, sloppy, victorious in every item, yet defeated on the whole. He came back thinking and even speaking like his mother or Ada. Till Durham arrived, he had not noticed the deterioration. Durham had not been well and came up a few days late. When his face, paler than usual, peered round the door, Morris had a spasm of despair, and tried to recollect where they stood last term, and to gather up the threads of the campaign. He felt himself slack and afraid of action. The worst part of him rose to the surface, and urged him to prefer comfort to joy. "Hello, old man," he said, awkwardly. Durham slipped in without speaking. "What's wrong?"
"Nothing."
And Morris knew that he had lost touch. Last term he would have understood this silent entrance.
"Anyhow, take a pew."
Durham sat upon the floor beyond his reach. It was late afternoon. The sounds of the May term, the scents of the Cambridge year in flower, floated in through the window and said to Morris, "You are unworthy of us." He knew that he was three parts dead, an alien, a yokel in Athens. He had no business here, nor with such a friend.
"I say, Durham."
Durham came nearer. Morris stretched out a hand and felt the head nestle against it. He forgot what he was going to say. The sounds and scents whispered, "You are we. We are youth." Very gently, he stroked the hair and ran his fingers down into it as if to caress the brain. "I say, Durham, have you been all right?"
"Have you?"
"No."
"You wrote you were."
"I wasn't." The truth in his own voice made him tremble. "A rotten back, and I never knew it." And wondered how long he should know it. The mist would lower again, he felt sure, and with an unhappy sigh he pulled Durham's head against his knee, as though it was a talisman for clear living. It lay there, and he had accomplished a new tenderness, stroked it steadily from temple to throat. Then, removing both hands, he dropped them on either side of him and sat sighing.
"Hall?"
Morris looked.
"Is there some trouble?"
He caressed and again withdrew. It seemed as certain that he hadn't as that he had the friend.
"Anything to do with that girl?"
"No."
"You wrote you liked her."
"I didn't. Don't." Deeper sighs broke from him. They rattled in his throat, turning to groans. His head fell back and he forgot the pressure of Durham on his knee, forgot that Durham was watching his turbid agony. He stared at the ceiling with wrinkled mouth and eyes, understanding nothing except that man has been created to feel pain and loneliness without help from heaven. Now Durham stretched up to him, stroked his hair. They clasped one another. They were lying breast against breast soon. Head was on shoulder. But just as their cheeks met, someone called,
"Hall!"
From the court, and he answered. He always had answered when people called. Both started violently, and Durham sprang to the mantelpiece where he leant his head on his arm. Absurd people came thundering up the stairs. They wanted tea. Morris pointed to it, then was drawn into their conversation, and scarcely noticed his friend's departure. It had been an ordinary talk, he told himself, but too sentimental, and he cultivated a breeziness against their next meeting. This took place soon enough. With half a dozen others, he was starting for the theatre after Hall when Durham called him.
"I knew you read the symposium in the VAC," he said, in a low voice.
Morris felt uneasy.
"Then you understand, without me saying more."
"How do you mean?" Durham could not wait. People were all around them, but with eyes that had gone intensely blue, he whispered,
"I love you."
Morris was scandalized, horrified. He was shocked to the bottom of his suburban soul and exclaimed,
"Oh, rot!" The words, the manner, were out of him before he could recall them.
Damn, you're an Englishman. I'm another. Don't talk nonsense. I'm not offended because I know you don't mean it, but it's the only subject absolutely beyond the limit, as you know. It's the worst crime in the calendar. You must never mention it again, Durham. A rotten notion, really.
But his friend was gone. Gone without a word, flying across the court, the bang of his door heard through the sounds of spring.